This is the People's Show, coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 2,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintec.net. Israel Fair back in for Bick Nizar. Bick will be back on his show, The People's Show. The next time it's on, believe that he's not on tomorrow with opening day, Blue Jays baseball. We will touch on a little baseball toward the end of today's show, but we will start the show with the Canucks. Ian McIntyre will join us in about 10 minutes. Do text us, 650-650. That's the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you. At Ladner on Bridge Street, Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. The Canucks are back home after a little road trip, mostly positive road trip from a win-loss perspective, with a couple of wins over the weekend, and then a comeback yesterday in St. Louis, only to lose in overtime. But the Canucks did practice back in Vancouver today. We do have some audio that we'll get to throughout the show. Before we get to that, we'll get to Quinn Hughes' audio in a couple of minutes here before Ian McIntyre joins us. To me, the standout story from the game against the Blues, beyond the obvious, not their best game, third game in four nights, some turnovers, some odd man rushes, looking a little bit like the team that we saw earlier this year, it really just crystallized to me that this Canucks team is currently constructed is this team that if they are going to push for this, if they are trying to be a playoff team next season, they have to succeed in the margins. And it is difficult, I think, year over year to predict how that's going to go. We saw how they got back in that game. It's Quinn Hughes with another big game. It's Elias Pettersson with a couple more points. Andre Kuzmenko with a couple more goals. But for this team to get enough results, because they've won a lot lately, and they've done it in different ways. But you look at the win against the Kings, for example, that was clearly a game that was reliant on goaltending, which we saw a lot of last year, to be fair. The game against Chicago is one where they could afford to not exactly be up to snuff, but did enough to beat a team that's not very good. The game against Dallas, I think you're quite happy with the way that they played overall. But over 82 games, you need to succeed in the margins. And that's what this team is at. They don't have the depth that's required to be a contender game in, game out. They're going to have to get by in a couple of areas. And that's what stood out to me from yesterday, where you look at, are they going to get enough from the bottom six? And what exactly does that look like? And then the big question, because the biggest difference outside of Thatcher Demko's slow start this year was, are they going to get enough defensively? Because last season, OEL and Tyler Myers did enough. They did something close to approximate second pair value, especially when they played together. And the idea is that Filip Ronek is going to at least give them that. It's a starting point to work on those parts of the margins, but it's certainly not the building blocks, the foundation for a team that is in peak contention, but there is still enough there for them to build off. Let's get to Quinn Hughes, who spoke to reporters today after the team got back in Vancouver and practiced. He's obviously having an incredible season, if you've been listening to the station. A lot of talk, a little bit of buzz about a late run to the Norris, but Quinn Hughes has had a heck of a year. And he's also, I think, tellingly gotten a little bit more comfortable in terms of speaking with reporters, talking to the media, and speaking his mind. I don't know if that's a direct correlation to having that alternate Captain A slapped onto his jersey for some games here down the stretch, but he's certainly taken to that mantle. So let's hear from Quinn Hughes here as the Canucks return to Vancouver after a pretty successful road trip.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're 10-2-1 in our last 13, so we've been playing some better hockey and gave ourselves a chance to win last night. But I think just to finish the year strong and go into the summer with some sort of confidence and knowing that, you know, we're on the right track and hopefully we can start the season that way. And I think that, you know, we have a lot of pieces in place and just need to keep going. So, like I said, finish strong and, you know, I think that, yeah, the last couple games are going to be really important here.
Quinn, we talked so much about the minutes you log, your playmaking ability, but your shot has improved. And now it's not just the wrist shots anymore, the slap shots are getting through. How, I guess, comforting was it to see a couple go in?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I can still work on my goal scoring. It was something that I thought I would, you know, had worked on last summer. And I think I've been putting myself in better spots to score and create, which I know I have been doing because I feel like I've been creating, you know, a lot more, even if, you know, everything's not going in. But I feel confident with, you know, at least every game, if nothing happens, I can be like, you know, I had my chances. And but as far as the goals, I think that, you know, at the start of the season, I wasn't getting some of the bounces. And I, you know, just tried to, you know, stick with it and keep shooting. And, you know, hopefully going forward and next year, I think that it's something that I want to continue to work on. And if I can do that, I think I'll be, you know, in a good spot.
On the rebound goal when you were down low and suddenly you get that great angle look, is that something you're talking about in terms of different positions and being aggressive?
Yeah, I think like I've had a lot of chances, yeah. Even the last couple of weeks in Arizona, I had a lot of chances in other games. And I think with me, sometimes I'm just always pass first and looking for other guys. But you know, I got to learn to shoot a little bit more. And, even I wouldn't say that clip, but I think there was a clip in the second where someone shot it and I was right in the slot and I gave it to Millsy backdoor. And I think that's like spots like that where those are harder spots to look at. Yeah.
Quinn, you're part of this leadership group. What has the leadership group talked about in terms of Friday's Pride Night game?
You know, I think that the organization is releasing when we're doing our Pride Night soon. I wasn't sure that they already did that, but yeah, I think that everyone in this room is looking forward to it. And I know in our organization, everyone's welcomed. And, you know, every time we've done the Pride Night, you know, I've worn the jersey and, you know, celebrated the night. So, you know, obviously you guys know that it's Friday, apparently. But, yeah, so we're looking forward to it. And should be a great night. Should be a good game.
Has there been any talk about whether or not to wear the jersey this season?
No, I don't think so. I think that we've worn it every year, at least since I've been here. Even the year, you know, it was the Canadian division, and there are no fans here. But I think every year we've worn it since I've been here. And like I said, I think it's a great night, and I'm glad we're doing it. And I don't think there's ever any discussion for doing it or not doing it. And, yeah, it should be a good night.
Canucks defenseman Quinn Hughes as the Canucks return to Vancouver after their road trip. The newsy bit there, I suppose, is confirmation, although nothing official yet from what I've seen from the organization in regards to Friday's Pride Night and wearing the Pride-themed warm-up jerseys. Quinn Hughes there with some pretty straightforward comments about his views on wearing them and the resonance behind it, as well as the history behind it. I think in this market, that would be something that would get a lot of scrutiny, understandably, deservedly. As we've seen, this has been a story across the NHL and still a couple of days before that. So assume that there will be further communication from the Canucks. I know last week there was a release that the team was excited, the organization was excited for the Pride Night and had a number of things planned, but there was no confirmation one way or another about the warmups. So Quinn Hughes today, speaking with reporters at Rogers Arena after practice, making reference to that. All right, let's get to our next guest. Ian McIntyre, Sportsnet's Canucks Triple Threat, joins us here on The People Show. This insider is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Hey, Ian, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Izzy. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks again for jumping on with us.
B- both hands on the throttle as usual, I guess, for you, huh?
That's right. Yeah, there's only one speed here.
What speed is that?
Well, hopefully it's a little bit more straightforward than the Canucks' speed last night. I enjoyed the lead in your article about retro night, although not the kind of retro night that the Canucks or their fans would like to see. It did really feel like we were watching a game from 2 or 3 months ago.
Yeah, it did. And obviously it was a little tongue-in-cheek, but it was just such a un-Rick Tocchet-like game. You know, from especially what we'd seen the last 5 weeks or so, when the team has been one of the best in the league. And yeah, I know it's garbage time. I know they're seeing a lot of backup goalies. I know there's no pressure on them. Like even last night, you know, the only pressure is their natural competitiveness that every player has to always want to win, no matter whether he's playing an NHL game in supposedly garbage time or whether he's playing cards on the plane, he always wants to win. But there was no pressure on them that, you know, it's a game they just absolutely can't afford to lose. So all these things make it easier to play. That said, it has just been a transformative experience watching the Canucks from what they were previously under Bruce Boudreau. And you know, the end for Bruce was so unfair, and it was so tough, and you know, the Canucks got crushed from a public relations standpoint on it, but this team needed to learn how to play, and they certainly have under Tocchet. They're such a different team defensively, and their 200-foot game, their top players have thrived despite the extra demands put on them to do things like back check and defend. But last night, especially in the first period, you know, all the two-on-ones they gave up and how slack they were defensively, and, you know, the big mistake, which Tocchet has talked about several times, that they kind of got that out of their game. That was back in their game. But, you know, it was still nice how they pushed, and you know, the good part of it, the glass half full part, other than the fact they came back and got to overtime after being down by 3 late in a road game, the glass half full part is just how well their best players are playing right now, and what that bodes for the future.
Well, let's dig into two of them. And we know that at times this season and yesterday was another good example of Elias Pettersson and Andre Kuzmenko, the connection that they've had, the chemistry that they've built. The Canucks have a pretty strong history of duos. You know, I'm thinking of the Sedins in particular. But where would you put these guys in the way that they've played together in terms of recent Canucks combinations?
Sorry, Quinn Hughes and?
Pettersson and Kuzmenko.
Oh, sorry, Pettersson and Kuzmenko. You faded out there in part of the question. Well, that goal they scored, was that not Sedinery? You know, the fourth goal. It's exactly what we came to expect when it was Daniel and Herrick playing together. Just this instinctive awareness. Incredible creativity and ability to begin with, but it's that instinctive awareness with each other that made the Sedins Hall of Famers. And to me, it's so impressive that Kuzmenko and Pettersson have built a lot of that and didn't even grow up as siblings and weren't even on the same team until this year. And in fact, there's been times recently where Kuzmenko has been, you know, had his minutes reduced by Rick Tocchet and on occasion even played with a different center than Pettersson. But when those guys are on and they're connected in the way they were last night, it just looks like a duo that, assuming that you're going to have them for years, and maybe that's a big assumption, you know, Pettersson, he's got a year to go, but they'll work on an extension this summer, obviously, and Kuzmenko has 2 years to go, but they could be special for many, many years. I think Pettersson is the real thing. He is, in fact, this good. He is, in fact, one of the top 10 or 15 players in this league, mm-hmm. which means in this world. And I think Kuzmenko is a naturally gifted and terrific finisher. So if they stay together, I think we're going to see a lot more Sedinery from them. It's nice to have a duo like that you know can not just anchor your first line, but be one of the best partnerships in the NHL.
Ian McIntyre with us on the People Show. Israel Fair filling in for Bick Nazar. One of the things that stood out late in the game as the Canucks were chasing to tie it was that Phil DiGiuseppe was one of the extra skaters. He's certainly made the most of his opportunity down the stretch, getting some minutes, playing with some of the Canucks' top players. What do you imagine he's building for himself heading into next year as an option for the Canucks?
Well, it's a fantastic story for him. He's 29 years old, and people forget when the coaching change occurred, Phil DiGiuseppe was still in Abbotsford and had not played for the Canucks this season. So for what he has done with the opportunity, he was kind of right guy at the right time, but that sounds like I'm taking away from his achievement. But clearly Rick Tocchet was looking for certain types of players in addition to the obvious stars that he had. And Phil DiGiuseppe perfectly fit that mold. And, you know, last night, Dakota Joshua got some attention for being on the first line. And that's, you know, in a way, he's comparable to DiGiuseppe in what he has achieved with a new coaching staff, with a new head coach. You know, Joshua was a guy who was on the fourth line, hadn't scored in forever with Boudreaux. And then he started to get a little more opportunity from Tocchet and made it onto the first line last game. Well, Phil DiGiuseppe essentially has become a staple of the second line. And when I say second line, I'm, you know, almost air quotes, because the way JT Miller has been playing, he's better than most teams' first line centers. And of course, Brock Besser has now had this resurgence, you know, since the trade deadline and all the pressure and uncertainty was removed from his shoulders. He has been a different player as well. Well, Phil DiGiuseppe is the third guy on that line and has kind of cemented himself into that position with his play. And obviously it has nothing to do with scoring, although he does have a high enough skill level to play with those guys. It's all about the consistency and dependability and engagement of his game, that he's on, you know, by Phil DiGiuseppe standards, he's on pretty well every night. And he has to be, because he is 29 years old. He's still trying to, I don't want to say establish a foothold, because he has played a lot, but he's, you know, he's trying to still extend and relaunch his career. And it certainly seems he's done that with the Canucks. Now, obviously, if they can eventually develop better players or sign another player, but I think their needs are on defense right now, not up front, there'll be a time where maybe DiGiuseppe and Joshua, as admirable as they are in terms of what they bring, maybe they don't play as high up the lineup. But for now, Tocchet obviously loves what he has seen from those guys, and especially DiGiuseppe, because he's seen it consistently, and so that's been rewarded with consistent deployment in the top six. And the fact that he was out on the ice last night, as was Joshua on successive shifts, I think speaks to how highly Tocchet regards them. Like, it's not a novelty act. It's not, oh, let's, you know, one game, throw them a bone and make them feel good, and then, you know, they'll go back to being depth players. He really likes these guys, and they have the potential to have a really good future with this club. But early days for them in these roles, and both of them just have to keep their heads down and keep building.
Well, what's at least clear in the short term is that guys like Joshua and like DiGiuseppe, if they pass the test will get opportunities to play within games or get a run of games at least. But we have seen the flip side, and we saw a line get benched yesterday and talking after the game that this is the type of game where you need your bottom six to give you a little bit of energy. Clearly, I'm with you that in the ideal lineup, guys like Joshua and DiGiuseppe are probably providing more depth and not playing with the top players. But as the Canucks are trying to work this out and build out their group, clearly, Rick Tocchet values some physicality, but what else do you think he wants to see from the bottom six group and the way that it plays?
Well, I think, you know, I said a minute ago how Phil DiGiuseppe has to be on every night by his standards. You know, he needs to play near his limit and to his capacity every night. And that's just a reality. That's, again, that's not a slight, that's not a knock on his skill level. Where he's at in his career, if he doesn't bring it, he doesn't play. And I think Tocchet would like to see everybody in that position bring it. You know, Kravtsov was coming back to the lineup after being a healthy scratch, really didn't show anything. Jack Stadnica, who's had injury issues, is still trying to just find a spot. Like a moral victory for those guys right now is when they get another game. And you know, depending on who else is available to play, that's not a certainty for either one. So just as Joshua and DiGiuseppe have seized this opportunity in a clean slate with a new coach who is looking, looking for something new, but every coach wants what DiGiuseppe and Joshua bring, but maybe he values it a little more. Maybe sees it in a different way than Bruce Boudreau would have seen it. I'd say Stadnik and Kravtsov are the guys at the other end of the spectrum who are getting opportunity, and Kravtsov has had more opportunity lately than Studnika, but those guys really need to seize it. You know, an important difference is where they are in their careers. Like Joshua's 25, I believe, has been a pro for 4 years, had some NHL time with St. Louis, and DiGiuseppe even more so, like his, I don't know what this is, year 9 as a pro for him, and he's played in the NHL. So those guys should have a better understanding of what it takes, and I would suggest might also be even hungrier when the opportunity comes, because they know that these chances aren't unlimited. Stadnica and Kravtsov are both much younger players, still trying to figure out what it is to be a pro, and so you need to show more patience with them. But, you know, these opportunities are not limitless. And this might be the best chance, this time down the stretch, might be the best chance either one of them has to show that they can be an NHL player, because who knows what next year brings.
The Canucks, through Jim Rutherford, he was the one who had his name at the bottom of a letter sent to season ticket holders that has gone out within the last hour or two. I found it interesting that Ethan Bear was listed as a player that they feel excited about as a recent addition, not because I don't think that he's played well, just because if I look at the lineup next season, my thought is if they're going to be a playoff team, odds are he will be on the third pair. Do you think that his inclusion there has any sort of indication on where they see him as a long-term fit, or at least a fit next season?
Yeah, well, I haven't seen the letter. I'll be curious to see it, because I was covering practice and then driving home to do my radio hit. I think what it shows, and you know, from what you're describing to me, is no, I don't think that is indicative of placement in the lineup. I think what it's indicative of is the template that Rutherford and Alvin have been trying to go as far as strengthening and rejuvenating the team by going out and getting young players of high pedigree, guys who have, you know, aren't just hope bets, guys who have a high enough skill level that they've been drafted high or they've already played in the NHL and done quite well, as Ethan Bear had before he went to Carolina. Get those guys and then nurture them and let them become full-time good NHL players here. I think that's what it shows with Ethan Bear. I mean, let's remember, this was almost a free pickup. They also outweighed Carolina so that they weren't paying the full freight on his contract, although they're paying most of it. But I think Bear is one of the best examples of what they're trying to achieve with this kind of low-risk, high-reward pickup. And he's one of the guys, certainly, almost from the time that he was acquired, that has played at a higher level here than maybe what people would have expected versus being a healthy scratch forever in Carolina. But, you know, he needs a new contract, and the competition should increase for these positions. In fact, we've seen that with people like Brisebois and Willanen emerging
right
from the Canucks minor league team and doing well enough to actually earn new contracts. The Canucks aren't just a stepping stone for them to try to showcase themselves and hopefully get another NHL deal from someone in the summer. They're part of this team's plans now. So, you know, where does Ethan Bear fit? I don't know, but I think he's been very good. I think he's been a good partner for Quinn Hughes, although they've now acquired Philip Ronick, and a lot of people think that he's eventually going to end up with Hughes. But Ethan Bear has been a very good pickup for them. And if they could do that twice a year, get an Ethan Bear, you know, where you're taking somebody who's not getting a chance somewhere else, and then they get a chance here, that would be pretty good team building for the Canucks in this regime.
Yep, makes total sense. Ian, thanks a lot for the time.
Thanks, Izzy. Good luck with the show.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I hope your guests get better.
They're stuck with me for the rest of the hour.
All right. Well, I'd say I'd be listening, but I'll be writing. But
yes.
I'm sure if you say something great or awful, it's going to show up on Twitter.
So yeah, that's usually the way it works now.
Steer carefully.
Thank you. That's Ian McIntyre, Sportsnet's Canucks. Triple Threat. This insider was a presentation of Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment, your Kubota All-Star team, avenuemachinery.ca, douglaslakeequipment.com. All right, coming up next, we'll play some more audio coming out from Canucks practice. And maybe have a little bit of fun with opening day. Just a day away. We'll do that next. This is The People Show on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Get smarter when you listen to Hockey Talk, the Hockey PDOcast with Dmitry Filipovich. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The People Show, coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Israel Fair in for Bick Nazar. We'll get to some audio from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet in a moment here. Do want to set something up quickly, hoping that you will flood the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line with some examples of this. So this weekend, starting Friday, I've got a bit of a sports weekend, a multi-event trip coming up. Friday, I'm driving down to Portland. I'm seeing the Trailblazers game.
This is such a humble brag.
Saturday, driving from Portland to Seattle for a Mariners game.
Yeah.
And then coming home Sunday for the Canucks game. So three games, three different cities.
All in the luxury suites. Yeah, we get it.
Me and Jack Nicholson sitting courtside in Portland.
Yeah, Moda Center.
No, not quite. The seats are all right, though. They're like five rows.
All right.
No, I'm just
simmer
kidding.
Down.
But yes, want to hear from people if you've got a dream sports trip. I'm not saying this is my dream sports trip, but I think it's a fun one. Whether it's multi cities. So you're hitting a couple of cities, two or three cities, different events that you can do realistically, or sports doubleheaders where you go to two events in, I mean, I guess you could do a sports doubleheader in multiple cities, but most of the time you'll have two events in one city. If anyone's got anything that they've done or that they'd like to do, I would love to hear that. Text 650-650, and we'll read the best ones that we get.
Honestly, the dream is probably Las Vegas, got Jets, Raiders one night, Canucks, Golden Knights the next night.
Okay.
And then depending on what
that's
happens with the NBA or with Major League
Baseball, you can add to it. Yeah.
And then you also have the, since you're so central in Vegas, and it is the gambling capital of the world, you could also just hang out at the sports books in the meantime and continue watching sports.
Yes. Yes, Vegas is a bit of a hack for this now that they've got multiple teams.
And honestly, if you, you know, maybe they line up, maybe they don't, but Formula One weekend in Vegas as well.
There you go.
That'd be a good one.
All right, we got one text already. I'll read this one, and we'll get to the Rick Tockett audio. My dad is taking me on a Southern California road trip, Dodgers and Blue Jays, then an Angels game, and then San Diego. So baseball is ready-made for this because there's, you know, games every day. I've done a handful of those types of trips as well. My best 2-1, so two events one day, was I did Tigers opening day in Detroit and then saw the Red Wings play that night.
Detroit.
Yeah.
Nice. Not nice.
You got to – yeah, it was Tigers opening day. There was quite an energy.
My friends and I, we did a week-long drive down the coast. We did – Giants in San Fran, then Warriors playoff game in Oakland, followed by a Dodger game, and then an Angels game.
That's pretty good.
All in like 6 days.
Yeah, that's a good week.
That's probably my best.
Okay, yeah. Well, let's see if the people can beat it. That text, the Southern California road trip, was from Jake in Port Moody. We'll wait to see if we get some more submissions here. But first, let's hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tockett with the team back in Vancouver practicing following their short road trip.
Yeah, just a couple of ailments, but there's a little bit of science to it. Fusey's been playing a lot, Miller's been playing a ton. Petey went out for a little bit just to give them a little bit of rest. A couple other guys were banged up, but went through practice.
Perosi arrives here. What do you know about him? What have you heard about him? And again, you've had McDonough here, so I'm sure it's a similar program to what he's gone through.
Honestly, I don't know much about him. A puck-moving guy, that's all I know. So, good. You met him today, first time, and we'll see. I don't know much about him, to be honest with you. I know the organization's excited about it. His hockey. I heard his hockey IQ is really good, which I like.
Neil Zaman kind of just goes about his business, Rick. Have you had an actual conversation with Neil? He's a pretty quiet guy in the room, but what have you come to appreciate about him as a player?
I usually get a good morning, and that's it from him in the morning. I appreciate his work ethic, his perseverance. There's a lot there. Yeah. You know, there's a lot there. He's really working on his face-offs. You know, that's something he really wants to work on this summer, and he wants to get bigger. But I've thrown him in different roles. You know, he's been in some situations where he's got to go against the best player on the other team. So that's what the organization's part all about, is trying to find guys like that that you can develop in your organization. He's one of these guys.
To have a hockey IQ like that, transition from the Swedish Hockey League and step right in. I mean, he looked good right from the get-go in Penticton at the Young Stars tournament.
Yeah.
What did I say about his IQ?
Yeah, like you said, we talk about hockey IQ. When I first got here, I'm a big pocket guy, and centermen on breakouts are very big. It's one of my big things, and he picked it up. Actually, he was doing it before he even got here, so whoever taught him did a good job. Like, he knows how to position himself to be in that pocket. Sometimes, usually younger guys, you got to spend more time with, but he's caught on to it pretty quick.
You said you believe that Dakota Joshua has more to give. What is it about his game that makes you think that he has more in his game?
Well, first of all, I like his deceptive speed. Like, he's got, you know, he's been getting some breakaways or some, you know, he got the Paul down the other night. I just think around the net, there's some tricks of the trade, you know, to learn from how to position yourself to get those goals. How do you position yourself for body position? Being a wall guy, he's getting even better at that. And those guys can, you know, if he can get that level, you can play him with great players, because the great players want to play with north-south type of players that will get you the puck and go retrieve the puck. So there is a spot there, and if he can grab it, we'll see.
Obviously, he has the physical game, but we we've also seen a lot of really good stick work from him with lifting sticks, poke checks.
Yeah.
Do you like that aspect of his game?
Yeah.
It's not just a banger.
Yeah, and that translates into penalty kill. If you watch him, he strips a lot of pucks. He gets stick of the stick lane, the puck lane. He's not afraid to block a shot. So, yeah, that characteristic that he does in the PK to the 5-on-5, transitions to 5-on-5.
You talk a lot about his ceiling, Rick. If he was to add maybe two or three explosive steps in the offseason and come to camp with that in his back pocket, is that what you talk about, higher ceiling?
Yeah, I think for him, I'd like to be involved in his training. I think he's got to train a little bit lower. Sometimes he's upright too much. And if you can just train a little bit lower, I think that's going to really catapult his game. Around the net stuff, body position, getting those loose rebounds. And I think that's a main focus for the organization is see how he trains.
When you talked about the pocket, the importance of that and breakouts.
Yeah.
Sort of the other end of the breakout. Is there a point where you want to see the puck to get to the distance up the ice? Is there something you can focus on as being a target for the guys to...
On the breakouts?
Yeah.
Yeah, our fourth guy, that's our next level, is getting that D up in the rush. I think we're not quite there yet. Obviously, Hughesy's the guy that supplies that, but we have other guys that I think we can get there. I think to win in this league, you have to have four on the rush. How you get there, there's different ways. And a good pocket guy will add to that fourth guy in the rush. It seems to me a lot of more than ever, the skill level is so high. Most of the best teams in the league are good off the rush, and we want to be a good rush team, and I think that's one element we got to really strive to be better in.
Going back to the college guys, Hoshi and McDonough, what do you need to see out of them over these next 8 games?
Yeah, I just think it's really learning for them. It's the game, obviously, getting Aiden in the game, but realizing the pace of practice, how do you recover after practice? How do you eat? How do you sleep? Just what the pros do to get to that level. That's really why they're here. Got to get them in a game here coming up. And they know when they leave for the summer what it takes. And I think that's the learning lesson for those guys.
Going back to Dakota, you mentioned the consistency. Got a decent performance yesterday. Do you think he's putting those games together now?
Yeah. Like I said, I'm seeing 2, 3, 4, 5 good games, not 1, 2, and then, a couple games... He'll tell you, when I first got here, I thought he slept, the sleepies every once in a while, like you didn't notice them, but I'm not seeing that much anymore. I'm seeing a guy that has really added to our team what we were lacking. And I think he sees a spot, whether it's this year or next year, that we're looking for, that is there more ice time for him? Is there more responsibility? Is he a guy that you can put him on the second unit of a power play? These are certain things that... They're up for grabs. Now it's his job to bang the door down and go grab it.
Who does he remind you of in your playing days?
Oh, geez. Craig Berube. Though Josh, he can score. Chief can score. The Chief can fight, though. I'll tell you what. That's put me on the spot, but a lanky guy that, I didn't know his speed through the neutral zone as he gets his feet going, where he can separate himself, and actually he's got a few breakaways. So, it's just a big guy that can skate.
Since he took over coaching this team, he's been top 10 in the NHL in hits. Was that a message that you sent to him and talked about specifically?
I mean, he knows from my... whether it's my pregame speeches or my practice speeches or whatever, that he knows that our team needs to be a little bit more grittier. It's not really about, he has some bone crunching hits. It's more of a chip in the body, I call it, get in front of people. And I think he's taken that to heart because that's something that we got to get better at as an organization. And we got to get better at that inside play or wall work or like the stuff that Joshua does. So have I talked to him one-on-one? Of course. But it's not like I'm every day going, hey, you better hit this guy. I think he understands where his role is on our team.
Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet as the team returns to Vancouver. They play Friday night against the Calgary Flames. Pride night for the Canucks, a game that will get, I think, a lot of attention because of what's been going on around the league in regards to Pride Nights. But we heard from Quinn Hughes earlier, who said that as far as he knows, they're going to wear warm-ups. It's something that they've done as long as he's been here. I think it's an important night for the fan base as well. We do have a number of texts here, Dom, about the sports road trips, the dream road trips. Let's start with this one from Ray in Richmond. November 2011, surprised my wife for her 35th anniversary with a trip to Barcelona and Madrid. Went to the Camp Nou experience tour one day and then watched Real Madrid and Cristiano Ronaldo play against Osasuna. Ronaldo scored a hat trick. So that's a cool one across the pond.
Are you a new camp guy or are you a Camp Nou guy?
I would say I'm a Camp Nou guy.
I'm a new camp guy.
I've been too. Humble brag for you, Dom.
Stop it. Pissed.
This text from Jeffro. I've always wanted to go to a Huskies game and then a Seahawks game the next day, or a couple of Canucks games in California or on the East Coast. I also would like to do that. I've never seen a college football game in person.
Oh, you were thinking college football.
Well, that's what like the
my head went to college basketball. That's something I would love to see.
I guess it could be college basketball, but
I'm sure
head,
it is within
football.
The context of the text. Yeah, but. Yeah, I would love to go down. Because
that stadium,
game.
I always drive past it on my
beautiful
way into
views.
Seattle. It looks awesome. Yeah. It looks like the greatest place to spend the Saturday yeah. afternoon.
By the way, for anyone ever going to a Mariner game or a Seahawk game or wherever downtown, and you don't want to pay the just extortionary prices for parking.
The $50, yeah.
Park at Husky Stadium.
Really?
Pay $2 for transit, and it takes you right to the stadium.
Oh, that's a good hack.
Yeah.
That is a good hack.
Sometimes you don't even have to pay for parking. There you go. You're welcome.
Good hack from Dom. Here's one. Go to the Open Championship in Liverpool and an Irish whiskey tour with my son. That's, you know, one sporting event, but, you know, drinking whiskey can also be.
Watch Liverpool get blitzed and then get blitzed.
It can also be. There's one from Dave. Do Canucks in Vegas. Then drove to Phoenix to see the Canucks and the Coyotes, and then did some spring training baseball, Dodgers and Mariners.
I've heard spring training in Arizona is just a vibe, just an absolute vibe.
I've only been to Florida. I've done Florida twice for work. I think Arizona is better because everything's closer.
Yeah.
In Florida, I covered the Jays and the Phillies and Clearwater are the only thing that's really close to Dunedin. Everything else is a little bit of a drive, whereas in Arizona, you can get to most of the facilities and get to, you know, yeah, whatever you want. Weather's good at that time of year. Let's see a couple more here. We've got one from Patio here. Chicago road trip would be fun. Some combination of the Cubs, the Blackhawks, the Bulls, and the Bears. Chicago's just fun.
Sports, food.
I co-signed Chicago blindly. Like, ignoring Seattle, Chicago
have you been there
probably
too?
My favorite American
Or
city.
Haven't you been, Izzy? Let's be honest.
I've been to some places.
You're a well-traveled man.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah. This one here from Reg. I'm a huge Philly sports fan.
My guy Reg, let's go.
Are the Flyers and the Canucks. NFL teams are the Eagles and Steelers. Started in Pittsburgh, saw the Eagles play the Steelers, and then saw Flyers Rangers, then went to New York and saw Flyers and Rangers again at MSG. Such a fun trip. And then here from Jamie and Langley, this is a one-off, but this would be I don't know if I would survive it, but Rangers in Celtic, this being specified at Ibrox, but the Glasgow Derby is just the Glasgow Derby is
yeah,
that's
wild.
Next level.
You know what I've always wanted to experience, and maybe at my own detriment, like a Galatasaray.
I'm with you.
Match
or like
against
a Boca Juniors. Yeah. Those are on like the short list of the
yeah.
The ones that you're not sure if you're going to survive.
But when you get out, you have a tale to tell. Absolutely. Honestly, those soccer matches are stuff of legend. Like, I hear some stories. We have John Ackerman, who's a voice at News 1130,
yep.
Next door, City News. And he tells a tale one time of going to a soccer match in Budapest, mm-hmm. and the ultras there being way more intense than anything you even can imagine here in Vancouver. So, yeah, European football matches. Yeah, sign me up.
Yeah, I saw Arsenal beat Manchester
what
United.
What else have you seen?
Saw Arsenal beat Manchester United. I did that just for you, Dob.
Are you going to Snapdragon Stadium to watch Wrexham play United?
No.
No?
Are you?
No, but...
you thought about it.
I did think about it. Bic was playing with the idea of taking the train.
All the way to
two-day train
San Diego.
Down to San Diego.
Do you want to know how far I've taken the train down?
Sure, why not? Let me guess, Cabo San Lucas? You've gone all the way?
No, I've taken it to Portland.
Is it a good experience?
It's a long day to Portland.
Right. But when you're on a train, that's kind of
like
the beauty
of it. It's nice. I've taken
it
to Seattle as well. Yeah. And you got to leave here early, though.
Yeah.
You've got to leave. I think you leave.
You have to
six.
Like traveling by train.
Yeah.
Right? Otherwise, it doesn't really make
it's
sense.
It's nice. You obviously don't have the stress of driving on the highway.
Yeah. Stress.
Well, in my sports car.
Of course.
But it's long.
Is that your Rari out front?
Oh, gosh. I wish. It's longer, though. Like, you leave here just after 6, and yeah. I think we got to Portland at, like, 4, where if you drive, you can get there.
But once again,
afternoon.
You're taking the train for the views and for the laid-back nature of it all.
There is a text here. This is maybe good for me to know before I cross the border. Mike from Langley. BC residents heading down to US for sporting events. You will get a ticket for expired tags if you have your old sticker data on plate. Be sure to remove any dated stickers before you head over the line.
Sounds like Mike and Langley had a bad experience.
Yeah, no doubt. All right.
Wait, can't you just show them your insurance?
I don't know.
Information?
That's
shady.
I
got to
scratch it off. I didn't take it off last year when they told us the BC government said we didn't need to update those anymore.
Don't love it. Anyway, good show.
Public service. Yes. All right. Thanks, everybody, for the texts. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Coming up next, Canuck Central. Sat and Dan are both in today, and there was a text here. Are we going to break down the Jim Rutherford letter? I'm sure that the guys will get to that coming up next. Keep it locked right here, the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.